Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Divination. Divination is a podcast and YouTube show by Elegant Themes, a proud leader in the premium WordPress theme and plugin market. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and I'm excited to bring to you yet another interview with one of the top WordPress developers and WordPress entrepreneurs working in the industry today. In this episode, I'll be sitting down with Pippin Williamson of Pippin's Plugins. They're the creators of a wide range of free and premium plugins, a few of which are not just popular, but wildly popular. You've probably heard of them: Affiliate WP, Easy Digital Downloads, and Restrict Content Pro. Now, each of these plugins has a large enough user base that on their own, they'd be considered formidable businesses. And it's this kind of success that makes Pippin such a great guest for Divination. There are a lot of you out there in this community who are working hard day in and day out to build and scale your own WordPress businesses. And someone like Pippin, who's weathered a lot of the problems you might be going through right now, is the perfect person to learn from. That's why when he and I caught up via Skype recently, I asked him to share his WordPress story and the lessons he's learned along the way. Here's our conversation. Pippin, welcome to Divination.
Thank you for having me.
So what's up in your world today, man?
Oh, not a whole lot. I've been working this morning to get a new office set up. I'm recently rented an office space and working on getting some of the things moved over there from my home office. So gotta have fun setting up the new internet, new desk, et cetera. So
nice. Are you at a standing desk right now?
I am.
Nice. How do you like it?
I love it.
I've been trying to get one and I can't find
one of the better
decisions
I've made.
Yeah. What kind did you end up getting?
This is actually, I built it myself, actually.
Nice.
I took two really large slabs of maple and kind of joined them together. So there is a big corner desk. So it mounts into the corner of my office. And then I have a stool that I can use. It's a nice Aeron stool that can either be, I can stand at it or I can sit down.
Fantastic.
Nice to be able to change it up during the day.
So you just got an office space. Where are you guys located, like city, state wise?
Hutchinson, Kansas. So right in the middle of the U.S. and right in the middle of the state as well. So it's a small town of about 50,000 people or so.
And where were you located when you got started?
I was in Lawrence, Kansas, which is about 3 hours to the east of here near the Kansas City area.
Cool. I actually ran into someone. I was at WordCamp Dayton this last weekend. I ran into someone when I told him that you were coming on the show. They're like, "Oh yeah, I used to live in the same town as him, and it was always cool to see what he was doing with WordPress." Do you do any local WordCamp stuff or WordPress meetups?
When I lived near Kansas City, I did.
Okay.
I participated in the Kansas City meetup group and the Kansas City WordCamp there. Now, there's not really anything local where I am now, aside from Kansas City, which is about a 4-hour drive for me. So I tend to, I'll go up there for WordCamp, but it's not very often I go for a meetup.
Well, cool. Well, speaking of doing cool things for the WordPress community, that's kind of the goal of this podcast. We want to provide both our community, our immediate community, and the wider WordPress community with knowledge, insights, and just support. So that they can have success with WordPress and the various tools available from both us and, entrepreneurs like yourself who are doing really cool things in the space. So to that end, you want to just jump right into the interview?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Awesome. Cool. Well, I like to start by getting to know our guests a bit more, kind of learn their WordPress story. So let's start by getting to know you a little bit better. Can you tell us about the origin of your WordPress story? Where did the fascination with WordPress start? Why'd you start using it? And how did that kind of take you down a road?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it started around my freshman or sophomore year in college, which would have been 2007, 2008. At the time, I was doing a little bit of web development, primarily just for some simple client setups, building some simple sites for people. And I started to get into WordPress through my brother, actually. He was running a WordPress site for his personal portfolio. He was doing a lot of 3D graphics and animation type stuff. And he decided that he wanted to make some changes to his website. And, who better to go to than family, because they work for free. So he convinced me to start learning some WordPress stuff and kind of got into it. And then from there, I just started doing a little bit more client work, doing it in the evenings and late at night while not taking classes. And it kind of just progressed from there. That eventually led into some WordPress plugin development. I would build custom features for clients based on what their needs were, and then those would turn into plugins that would either get released for free, or if some of them would turn into commercial plugins. And once I kind of got into the plugin space, I realized that's what I really liked doing. And so I started focusing more and more in that area. And eventually kind of got to a point where I wasn't able to do client work anymore. It was taking up too much time that I was trying to devote to plugin development. And so at some point, I think either around my junior year to senior year of college, I just decided, let's during the summer between semesters, let's see if we can make it work. Let's see if I can pay the rent. If I can't pay the rent, I'll figure out something else. And so here I am today. And so I paid the rent.
Oh, worked out. Perfect.
It did.
So you said that you got into the plugin space kind of organically. It just was like, hey, I need to start making specific tools. Can you tell us about the first commercial plugin that you developed sort of intentionally as a commercial plugin and what that process was like?
Yeah, absolutely. It was actually the very first plugin that I wrote as well.
Oh, cool.
It was a little plugin called Font Uploader. And at the time, this was around 2008, I think, we didn't have very good, there weren't very good options for doing custom fonts on websites. You had your basic font stack, and then things like Google Fonts and a few other resources were just starting to come into the market. The best font options you had were, I don't even remember what they're called now, but they actually relied on Flash and a few things like that, for like if you wanted like really nice, smooth, pretty fonts. And so I built a little plugin that allowed my client to change the fonts on their website whenever they wanted. Now, any good designer, which is definitely not me, will tell you that letting your clients change the font on their website is probably a terrible plan. But it's what he wanted, so I built a plugin for him that allowed him to do it. And then I decided to release that as an official plugin on, I put it onto the Code Canyon marketplace from Envato.
Okay.
And so that was the first one. And it surprised me. I had no idea what I was getting into. I didn't know what I had built. And it actually turned out to do reasonably well.
Oh, nice.
So it let me buy a few extra cups of coffee each month and kind of gave me the first inkling that, maybe there's something to this idea of building plugins and selling them and trying to build up a business around it. So I went and built a few more and then a few more.
What were some of the initial lessons that you learned from that first plugin launch that kind of helped you iterate for your next couple plugins and kind of get the ball rolling on expanding your product line?
I think it was I don't know if I can really answer that because at the time, looking back on it, I had no idea what I was doing.
Yeah.
It's
always hard to, go, okay, what order did I learn something in? But
absolutely.
You can, for the sake of stories, one of my favorite lines about stories is telling stories is all about simplification. So feel free to simplify and just, we all know that it's not going to be, on this Tuesday, I learned this.
One of the things that I didn't know what I was getting into. I didn't know anything about, I barely knew how to write PHP at the time, which is, almost all WordPress plugins are written in PHP, and I barely knew what I was doing there. I think looking back, one of the main things that the early plugin dev taught me, I think, from a business perspective, but also a developer's perspective, is just that idea that if you want to do something, just dive in. You don't have to be an expert at anything to dive in and slowly work your way through. I mean, I went from not knowing anything about what I was really building to, I think achieving a reasonable amount of success in the industry by simply diving in and going after something that I enjoyed. I wrote something and I had fun building it, and so I did more of it. So maybe just a general thing would be to follow what you want to do. Beyond that, it took a little while longer to learn it, but definitely a big one. This is maybe even like two to three years worth of trying to figure this out, is just because you've built something doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to be your bread and butter.
Sure.
So you need to diversify your options early on and figure out what sticks, what doesn't. Mm-hmm. So for me, I built probably 10 or 20 different commercial plugins in the first 2 years.
Yeah. I noticed that you had launched I think you mentioned this in our previous conversations that you launched something like a plugin a month for like the next few years.
Yeah. And I did. I did that for a couple reasons. One, because I just really enjoyed it. I mm-hmm. really liked what I was doing. So I kept building more and more. And two, because I felt like if I was going to do this full time, I needed to get a pretty wide range out there. I needed to have a pretty decent portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And so by doing that, I could maybe this plugin provided X amount per month. This mm-hmm. one did this. This one did that. And I was able to kind of hit a bunch of different different niches and see, okay, which market do I maybe want to go towards? At the time when I first started, honestly, I had no idea if mm-hmm. I wanted to focus in an area. I just wanted to write plugins. I didn't really care what the subject was. Over time, I realized that maybe that's not always the best idea, because when you write a plugin for a market that you realize you really don't like, excuse me, you start to dread supporting that plugin.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, maybe we could switch and talk about support for a little bit, because that's sure. another thing that, I know just from seeing you around the community for so long and seeing you in different forums. And then just whenever your name seems to come up, whether it's in a conversation about WordPress elsewhere or about your products, people tend to talk about, the attention to detail or the attention to support that you have. And so support seems to not only be something that you take very seriously, but because you take it seriously, it's like an asset for your company, almost becomes its own marketing. Can you talk about what your approach to support is and how it
Absolutely.
Got to where it is today?
So early on, it wasn't something I ever thought about. It just, to me, it seemed natural that if I built something and you had a problem with it, I was going to help you, especially if you've paid me for that product or that service. Mm-hmm. To me, there was no question or quandary about that. It was just the natural way that things should probably work. I discovered pretty quickly that that is not a ubiquitous opinion, but that's the way that I've always looked at it. And over time, I realized that that was a very strong marketing asset to us. There's not every company does that. And so there's a lot of customers out there that look for that support first kind of model mm-hmm. where they know that if they buy from this company, that they're going to get help with any issues or questions that they have. And so it's absolutely become an asset for us. I think it just goes back to it's the right thing to do. And if you manage it properly, support can be extremely overwhelming, especially once you get up to scale. But if you manage it properly, it's not, it doesn't have to be a problem. Mm. But again, it can be a tremendous marketing power for you. And it allows, through support, it allows you to really understand how your customers use your products, what they struggle with, where you can improve it. And I think it's one of the best ways that you can really help to refine your product and or your service over time. And I think that applies to all levels of the business. So, If you're a one person team, then obviously you're doing everything. You're the developer, you're the marketer, you're the support person. When you're a five person team, maybe you have a little bit more separation. But I still think it's important that everybody be involved to some degree. So even though we're up to 10 to 15 people now, I still try and help out and support every single day. For one, I want to know what are our customers experiencing, what are they having, what are they struggling with,
mm-hmm.
And I like to help out the team as well, because I think that's very important.
For people who are starting their own companies, we have a lot of people and in our community in particular who are basically building up their own businesses, and they'd like, they're running into some of these growth pain points that entrepreneurs in this space run into. And I think one of those things, especially when you have figured out some of the really hard stuff that is kind of essential to the business, like getting a lot of customers, you now have to manage those customers, and you have to support those customers. And yet, the talent for that can be kind of hard to zone in on. I think we mentioned this in our other conversation as well. How do you find a support person who's really good at what they do, who's willing to stay a support person, you know, over the long haul, or at least long enough for you to have a reasonable turnover in that position? Because it seems to me, and I've asked some other people, that really good support people are kind of the same thing as like a good junior developer or something like that, or even a developer. So someone who is, you know, they know the product inside and out, they really have, you know, their stuff together, and they can quickly get in, diagnose problems, you know, write up tickets for, you know, fixes and bug fixes and whatnot. How have you approached that, and what do you do to keep, you know, the talent in your support staff?
Well, I think the first thing you need to realize for anybody doing this is that a bad support person is probably the fastest way to lose a customer. In terms of, I mean, if they've purchased your product and they now have a problem and they come to you and have a really bad support experience, you've probably lost them forever as a customer. So a bad support person is very expensive, probably more so than paying a good support person a decent salary. So I think part of the answer is don't pay them a normal support salary, pay them more. It will pay off in the long run. Or even the short term.
Sure.
Simply because, again, support, when done well, is a tremendous marketing tool. And if you have bad support agents, you've just completely lost all of the advantage that gives you. So once you've found that talent, keep them there by taking care of them. Pay them a good wage, and make sure that you aren't treating them as, oh, just a regular old support tech. I mean,
yeah. An afterthought, basically.
Right. Don't treat them as an afterthought. They're the soldiers on the front line. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah,
they're the ones that are really in the trenches going through the struggles every single day. I mean, we think of developer, like especially senior level developers, as extremely valuable because they're some of the only ones that can do what they do. The mental burdens and difficulty of working in support every single day, especially at scale, is not something that most people can cope with. It's a challenge. I think it's harder than development by far. So yeah, they should be, the big one is pay them, take care of them, pay them well.
What are some other things you do to take care of your support staff besides salary? Because I mean, obviously that's always going to be a concern, but once you get people agreed to a good salary and everybody's happy with that, you know, what do you do just to keep people happy and rested? Because support can be a very emotionally draining job.
Get them out of support every now and then. One thing that we try to do is make sure that everybody on our team, especially if you are somebody who is primarily focused in support, is that at least one day a week or a few hours a day, you're off doing something else. If you want to do development, then you're involved in development. If you want to do product marketing or content marketing or whatever focus you have, make sure that they're getting some time not in support. One of the problems with support is that it's kind of a black hole.
Yeah.
In that you can very easily do nothing but support 24/7, and it will never stop. Especially when you have hundreds of thousands of customers, or even just a few thousand customers, like it's amazing how much of an ongoing challenge it can be. You think, if you've ever worked in support, you see a support queue and you're like, all right, I'm just going to get through the queue and then I'm done. I can take a break for a day. Wrong. It doesn't work that way. That queue never empties.
Yeah.
Ever. It might be empty for a few minutes or a few hours, but that's it. And so you have to take breaks. I think we have to be very cognizant of what people that are working in support, what they need physically and mentally as well.
Yeah.
Whether that is simply backup from other team members, or it's the freedom to take a break and go for a jog, or if it's whatever it is, I think it just goes back to make sure that you're taking care of them.
Excellent. What are some of the tools you guys use to keep on top of the support queues?
The main one I think is just having a good ticketing system. We now use Help Scout for our support ticket system, and that works really well. And then we also use Slack extensively internally as our internal communication tool. And so we have, at any given time, we usually have several people in our Slack room that are able to help out each other. So if somebody has a ticket, they can jump in and ask for help from the other team members, say, hey, do you know what this is? Or have you seen this problem before? And just making it a making it easy for a team member to get assistance has been valuable. Yeah. Beyond that, I'm not really convinced that one tool is significantly better than the other. So whether you use Zendesk or Desk.com or Help Scout, they all provide the same basic set of tools and then each have their own unique advantages or disadvantages. So whichever one works for you.
Yeah, makes sense. Kind of more about how you embrace it and put it into practice than it is, you know, the tool itself. Cool. There, to sort of, I guess, maybe backtrack a little bit and get back to like talking about plugin development, I think there are two other interesting things that we talked about in our pre-interview that I wanted to revisit. One was, and you know, kind of figuring out what makes, you know, a hit plugin. And I know that was a term that we kind of joked about as being like, okay, that's not really like, you can't really make a rule for that. But we did come up with a few things. And then the next one was, once you have a concept that you feel confident about pursuing, you know, talking about how important it is to get a minimum viable product out and what that process looks like. So let's talk about deciding what kind of plugin you want to build. Do you have a process for that?
Yes, kind of. The first one for me now, there's a couple of criteria that I look at. Number one, it depends on the scale of the plugin that I'm building. So let's just assume that we're talking about larger scale commercial plugins, something that you want to make a business out of. I mean, because it's a whole different set of criteria that apply to, here's a little tiny plugin that I built for free that maybe we'll get a few donations a month. So let's just assume that we're talking about a large scale commercial.
Yeah.
So the first thing is make sure that, I think this might be the obvious one, make sure you have an audience for it. You can build the coolest set of features ever, but if there's no audience, well, it's never going to turn into a viable business.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do to find that audience? I mean, how do you do your research?
Well,
I
think it depends on what you're going after. Some are obvious. Building an e-commerce platform, for example, has an obvious market,
right?
Because it's a very well-known multi-billion dollar industry. So there's something there.
Yeah.
Whether you're able to grab it or not is a different story, but there's something there. Now, if you were to say, well, you know, I'm just going to target people that are selling crochet patterns. Turns out it's actually a pretty large market, but weird. Like, that's not one that you would probably, if that was really what you're going after, you might have to do some research to figure out, okay, how many people are there that are actually trying to do this? Am I looking at a few dozen users? Am I looking at 100,000 users?
Well, when you did Easy Digital Downloads, obviously WooCommerce was already out there doing its thing, being, you know, kind of the WordPress plugin for e-commerce. How did you decide, okay, within the WordPress e-commerce space, what is it I want to focus on? How can I be competitive here?
So, and this is where kind of I think one of my other personal rules comes into play is that I think it's important to do something you want to build and something that you personally want to use or that you as a company want to use. So when I decided to build Easy Digital Downloads, I was actually in the process of trying to sell my own plugins. I had been selling plugins through the Code Canyon marketplace, but I had decided that I wanted to move everything off and put them on my own website, build my own store, and control every part of the process. Now, there were several e-commerce options available at the time, including WP Commerce, Jigo Shop, WooCommerce, Cart66, Shop, and a few others. And I looked at each one, I kind of assessed each one and just said, okay, do these have what I want? And ultimately decided that for one reason or another, they didn't fit quite what I personally wanted for my own store. So I decided to scratch my own itch and build what I needed and what I wanted. And if that is something that you can do, if what you want to build still targets that an audience well enough, awesome. I think that's a win-win. Because one of the fastest ways that you're going to find out if your product works well is if you use it yourself. Building a product that you never use can be great, but when you do that, there's a level of separation from you, from the product and the customer that you don't ever experience.
Yep.
And so that was kind of my way of validating the idea. Like, am I happy to use this? Do I like it? I know there's a lot of other people, like in the WordPress world, for example, that are selling plugins, selling themes. So maybe this will apply to them too, because if I've had the challenge, I'm sure others have too. That was my personal way of validating it.
Right.
Now, I might do it a little differently now. Maybe I won't. when we built one of our next products, which was Affiliate WP, which mm-hmm. is an affiliate tracking plugin for WordPress, we kind of looked at it the same way, in that we had been running EDD for a while, and we knew we had a lot of customers that wanted to run affiliate programs, and we knew that there were some options out there, but based on our own experience running our affiliate program, and based on the experience that we were hearing from customers, nobody was really thrilled with the options that were out there. So we're like, hey, you know what? This makes sense. Why don't we go ahead and build this and try to build it the way that it pleases us, and then we can please the customers at the same time.
Very nice. And so, you know, so obviously, first and foremost, you want to have a good idea. We've talked about that, how you come up with that. Then you want to talk about solving the problems of your customers. So now let's talk about another area that has been important for you guys and your success, which is keeping developers in mind and how they're going to use your products and how keeping their needs in mind actually promotes and helps spread your product. Can you kind of speak to that?
Sure. So I think there's, at least in the open source world and in the WordPress world, there's a few ways that you can build a product. You can build it in such a way that it works the way that you intended, and that's it. There's no extra features. There's no possibility for any other developers to maybe add on to it or build their own custom features. Or you can build in a way that, much like WordPress is built, where other developers can come in and build custom features that run on top of yours, or perhaps change features that you've built to modify the behavior or various aspects of the system. And that's how we chose to build it. We chose to build it in a way that we call it extensible, so mm-hmm. that, let's say, if you want to come in and you're going to use our system, but maybe a specific feature doesn't exist, or maybe there's an integration with a third-party service such as Mandrill mm-hmm. or MailChimp or Zapier or Aweber or something like that. If that doesn't exist, if you wanted to and you have the resources to do it, you could build that feature yourself.
Sure.
And so by doing that, we were able to kind of make a small community within the WordPress world of other developers that were building on top of our platform, which not only provided additional features and options to customers and our users, it also helped build this kind of web of other developers that are helping to mm-hmm. promote the product.
And does that kind of mentality help you in terms of launching? Because you can launch as an MVP, but as long as it's extendable, there's room for other people to quickly adopt it?
Yeah, I think absolutely, because you can build a little bit more of a basic product, just that minimum viable product, get it out there, and then
solve that one big problem, and then let others worry about the extendable features.
One of the things that anybody who builds a large piece of software will discover is that there's a million little edge cases where somebody wants to do something one way that it's just too specific. It doesn't work. Yeah. That way, it's maybe something that you never anticipated, but by making it extensible from the ground up, if they want to, they can do it themselves, or they can hire a developer to tweak it to fit their specific needs. So it becomes flexible.
So one of the things, and obviously you had to go through this maybe more than once, just dealing with the scale of your own company and the challenges that come with that. And I think anybody from a solo freelancer to someone building a small agency to someone running a larger company, they know they all run into different variations of that problem. And you attributed your current, you know, state of well-being or success to something, a lesson that you learned where you said if you could do it over again, you would do less sooner. Can you talk about that and what coming to that realization was like?
So for the first 3 years or so, I did everything myself. I was the developer, I was the marketer, I was the support, I was the accountant, I was the finance manager. I did everything. I mean, which I think is a pretty familiar situation for anybody who's starting out or anybody who's used to doing independent contract work. And for me, it felt natural to just do everything because I've always been somebody who's interested in working independently. What I discovered, though, as we started to scale up, is that I simply don't have enough hours in the day to do it all. And two, I shouldn't be doing it all because I don't have the expertise to be filing my taxes, mm-hmm. for example. there are certain things I'm good at, and filing taxes is not one of them. And I mean, to give you a more precise example, like not realizing that I should be offloading some of that work, taxes, for example, it almost cost me a very large sum of money because I made a mistake. And so my recommendation would be to not necessarily outsource early, but bring others on early, whether it is a developer, mm-hmm. a support agent, an accountant, whoever it is, whichever role that they're coming on to help with, bring them on early. And they don't have to be full time. I mean, you could bring somebody on part time. I mean, even now, like my accountant, for example, works a couple hours a month to take care of things. Bring on support agents to work a few hours a month or a few hours a week. Bring on a developer to maybe do quick dev sprints, work for a week, then take a month off, then work for another week when you're ready to do another version or something like that. So the thing that I would have definitely changed if I could go back and do it again was the scaling of people earlier. I would bring more in sooner, because I got to a point where not only was I starting to make business mistakes in terms of things like accounting, I was getting overwhelmed. Sure. I was getting mentally drained, getting burnt out, making it much more difficult to continue it, which also makes it much more difficult to bring someone else on, because when you bring someone else on, you have to train them. Yeah. You have to get them familiar with it. And when you're already overwhelmed, it's very hard to find the time to do that.
Absolutely. Now, are there attributes that you look for, particularly in the early stages when it is you and you desperately need someone to come on and help take that load off? Are there types of people that you look for at different stages of growth to come in and fill certain positions, aside from their skill set, I guess?
I don't know about at different stages of growth, but there's one overall kind of person that I look for. And this is mostly for me, but I think it applies to just about any other business as well, is that I'm not a manager. I'm not here to dictate your tasks throughout the day. I'm not here to give you a list of assignments for the day and then congratulate you when you're done. I'm here to work next to you. And so you have to be self-driven, and you have to be the kind of person, if you're going to work on my team, for example, you have to be the kind of person that just knows what to do or is able to find that next thing to do. We have mountains of to-do lists, bug reports, feature requests, customers to reach out to, support tickets to work through, et cetera. And so you have to be that self-driven person that just says, okay, well, I'm done with that project. I'm going to move on to the next. Yeah. I don't necessarily need direction. Sure, we'll have meetings and we'll have ongoing discussions about, okay, what do we want to focus on next? But when it comes to day-to-day tasks, you're not getting a checklist every day. And if you need that kind of handholding, then that's not the right fit.
That sounds like I think that's the companies that those types of people end up in, and that culture, let me start that over again. I think when those people find a company that's willing to like let them go in that way, or give them the freedom to be as good at their job as they're capable of being on their own terms, I think they really thrive in that position too.
I agree. I noticed that. I like it when we can give each person the opportunity to find their role. Mm-hmm. We may hire you to come in for support or for development, but through your own efforts and through your own volition, if you prove that you're really, really good at something else, there you go. There's your new role. That's what you're going to do. You're going to shape your role as you go, because you're proving where your value is most.
Fantastic. Well, it looks like we're kind of running up on our time limit. I'm trying to keep these, around 30, 35 minutes. Do you have any kind of closing thought that you'd like to sign off with? Something that you know, if there's one thing that people wanted to take away from this conversation that you would kind of highlight?
Yeah, I think when you're building your business, whether you're looking for something small or large, I think one thing that's super important is that you take care of yourself. And I don't just mean like make sure you pay yourself a decent salary or anything like that, but take care of yourself mentally, emotionally, physically. If you get burnt out or you lose control of your health or anything like that, it's a heck of a lot harder to run your business. And it's not easy. And building something from nothing is yeah, probably one of the most difficult things I've ever done, rewarding, but you got to take care of yourself. So if that means that you have to take a little time off, take some time off. If that means you need to sleep a few extra hours a night, sleep a few extra hours a night. Whatever it is, make sure you're taking care of yourself and take care of your team.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show. And hopefully we'll talk again sometime soon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
As always, I just want to extend another big thank you to Pippin for making time in his schedule to come on the show and to share his story and insights with all of us. If you have any questions about the topics that we discussed or thoughts on the show in general, please feel free to drop us a line in the comments section wherever you're watching or listening to this. Now that's all for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I look forward to sharing a new episode with you next Friday. In the meantime, I hope to see you around the blog comments at eleganttemes.com/blog and across all of our social channels. See you around.